for me, if you three putt less, period, you know, you're going to get better. And yeah, we all do that. It's like we all have a longer putt and it's not quite as close. And it's the next putt's a little bit, you know, not as a little longer, a little tougher. And we miss that one. And we're like, okay, my putting's off. So a lot of the times you can continue to putt the way you're putting. But if you wedge it, you know, 3 foot, 4 foot closer, if you've got 2 and 3 footers instead of 5 and 6 footers, you're going to make more putts.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Back in studio once again. Welcome back, Mr. Tyler Fitzel.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, how's it feel to be back? What was it? Was it about a year ago? It was about this time last year we did this, right?
No,
does that sound right?
I bet it's almost 2 years ago.
No.
Oh yeah.
2 years?
Well, remember.
No way. Because this is episode like right around 100. So the max it could be would be, well, yeah, the max it could be would be 2 years. But that seems like, I think it's about a year.
But I think we were discussing, which we won't get into. We don't have to.
Okay.
We were discussing Kirk Cousins as a Vikings quarterback.
Yeah, so before the start of the season. So that probably would have been, winter. So that, a year and maybe a half, that, year and a half.
No, that wasn't whether we should have kept him. That was the year before. That was his last year here.
I'm going to have to go back. That just goes to show it's been way too long since you've been on.
You know, I think it was earlier that day you had talked with JP about wedges.
Wow, that was a long time ago.
And so it would not have been his new lineup, which came out last year.
Yeah, it's probably been a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
About closer to a year and a half.
That's right. I see a lot.
You do see me a lot. Yeah, we've got a lot.
Get out golf. We get to, I'll see you at the store.
We do all of it.
We did a putter fitting the other day.
I'm going through all the questions that we can talk about today, but before we do that, I'm sure most of the audience is familiar with you, but you can go through your background, what you do at Second Swing, how long you've been doing what you've been doing, which is why we have you on the pod to talk. We're specifically going to talk equipment and kind of trends in golf right now because, you know, it's the off season and people are they're starting to tweak their bags. So a little intro first and we'll dive in.
Sure. I've been a fitter now. I think I'm almost at year nine through Second Swing.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think a lot of it just started back when I was in college and I was interested in the golf side of things, but I came out, I was a high school teacher for a long time. And one of the things that I was doing in the summertime was also I'd build clubs, I'd repair clubs, I'd try different shafts, I'd try different equipment. So I really got into the technical side of things early on. I was also a competitive golfer. So I'd play in tournaments, like been fortunate enough to make it to like State Am a couple times, Players Championship.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Won a couple of four balls.
It's awesome. I had no idea. I mean, I knew you played, and obviously you're a good player. I didn't know you played at that level at one point.
Yeah. I know. What? That's the thing. You see my game now, and you're like, oh, my God. You know, all right.
But then, well, there's game in there, though. Like, you put the lights out, and you hit it dead straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that gets a lot of people around the course for a very long time.
It can, and I think that's one of the advantages. Not that you have to have that to be a good fitter, but having that knowledge base. Also, having been where I was in terms of what I knew about the equipment at the time, what I was doing. And now coming backwards into, you know, a 2, 3, 4 handicap, but having been at a plus handicap, having been to a grander scale, if you will, like that. So I know where it was, I know where it is. And I think everything in between, including like, you know, there's the days when it's just not on. And I hit the same sort of shot, a customer might come in and, says I'm a 15 handicap. Well, I've played like a 15 handicap many, many a times. So trust me, I know.
Yeah. It's like any field or anything, right? Like when you've lived it and experienced it, it just makes it that much easier or better at your job, I should say, when you know how to relate to anyone and everybody that comes through the door.
Totally. Perspective. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I want to kick off our episode. Well, first of all, I'm going to get this question out of the way. You're going to know who asked this, but somebody asked when you hit one really crisp, what do you call that?
Oh, right on the button.
Right on.
Yeah.
That was from Zinger.
But did he leave any other reference to that?
No context.
So then that's not for the podcast.
Okay, we'll save it for another time. One of our on-course rounds.
When we golf again.
Yeah, which we do a couple times a year.
He'll tell you.
I want to start the episode. So we are in, mid-February now. So I think a lot of people are starting to, a lot of new equipment has come out. A lot of people are starting to figure out if they're going to change anything in their bag, maybe starting to see April on the horizon, if you will. I want to start real quick by talking about what kind of the best of 2024 was that you saw, because I see Second Swing do this a lot, talking about like what the fitter's favorite clubs of 2024 was. Mm-hmm. So if you just start there and kind of work into the trends that we saw, I have a couple top of my mind, but first off, I want to, what did you think about 2024 new equipment wise? What were you guys seeing in terms of trends? What were a lot of people doing in their bags that's going to kind of carry over into 2025?
So it would have been probably in fall of 2022. I said, working a little bit more at a corporate office on some project type stuff. So like, what do I mean by project? Well, there's a lot that's going behind the scenes in terms of training, education, the types of things that we want to put out. And our content team has gotten, a million times better just in its growth and the number of people that we have with it at Second Swing. And so I said, I kind of want, from our fitters' perspective of like, well, what's working, what's not. You go to some of the others, that especially the magazines, you see the hot list here and you see the hot clubs and the top clubs. And
a lot of paid for stuff, right?
Well, yeah, there is that. So, in a sense, everything's all revolves around marketing anyway. So if you're asking me a question and it has to do with something that you've seen, it's marketing. That's a part of it anyway. So for us, it's also the same sort of thing. We want to be able to market to people. What have we seen? So I came up with the Fitters Choice Awards. And what we've done is gone back and we've asked the fitters to kind of choice rank 1, 2, 3 in all these different categories. We started with drivers. We've got it for irons. We've gotten into wedges. We're getting into fairways and hybrids. We've got it in putters. It's like we're really trying to dig in on some of the things that we've seen a lot, things that have happened in the hitting bays. So for instance, if we go back to 2024, we just kind of released it last week and we started to talk a little bit in one sense, like you talk about the category for drivers, low spin drivers. Drivers in general are basically trying to attack spin anyway. We try to get ball speed and the right kind of launch and spin. You can do it with a club head, which is more primarily to that. You can do it with the shaft, which is another piece of the puzzle. You could do it with grip. You just like every component that goes together in that club. So we started to see certain choices. The one that was the most stark reality, the two, number one was in player distance irons. So we're talking about a category like a T200 by Titleist. We're talking about, let's say maybe like an Apex by Callaway.
When you're saying player distance, you're talking about like, let's just perspective for the audience. Low, like under 10 handicap, right?
Yeah.
And somebody that's looking for more distance rather than like control and spin.
Well, and so that was one of the things that we actually discussed right away when we launched a couple weeks ago, on our podcast for Second Swing. I don't look at things as handicap because handicap as a number is misleading if I'm not getting the whole picture. Like you might have a 15 handicap because you get really, really got trouble off the tee. But everything else is okay, so you make up for it. And that's where it's like handicaps are kind of, you're making up for shots in certain areas of the game because a lower handicap tends to do most things really well across the bag. But someone could come in with a high handicap, and it might be their irons that causes them the shots and strokes.
But you wouldn't necessarily fit somebody into quote-unquote game improvement irons even if they struggled with their irons, right?
Well, so I look at it this way. There's three things that we've got. When we're talking about a fitting, you got the club, the swing, and the ball. And the clubs is not a variable. The swing's a variable, and what happens to the ball is a variable. And so we have to add those three things together. And the ball's kind of the result part, but the swing is always going to be a variable. And with that, we have to try to make sure that we're getting a club that fits. And for me, I talk a lot about the right fit as something that, given a swing that you can repeat, you're going to get a consistent result. If you look at it this way, everybody's product in manufacturing that has a great sweet spot.
Sure. Yeah.
Outside the sweet spot is where you start to see variability. And there are certain things about certain clubs for certain companies that may be better for you depending on what we're looking for. A good example, if someone has more of a lift or a neutral shallow attack angle, or they're picking the ball up a little bit, but we say that they're a really high handicap, putting a giant sole on something that's already moving upward is not going to work. You kind of have to go to something that gets better turf interaction. That might be a slimmer sole. Now, I'm not saying that we'd take a high handicap and pop them into a blade, but if I get better turf interaction, whatever the club is, I might get a better result with that. Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to derail us from the trends.
But that's exactly it, right? So one of the best clubs in the market in the player distance category to that is the i530 by Ping. It kind of encompasses a lot of things. It looks kind of like a blade. It's hollow. It's got really good ball speed. It's got more grooves closely together. It's got really good launch. It gets really good spin. It's great on miss hits. So when you take a club like that, in our fittings, or I say our Fitter's Choice Awards, the number one choice was the i530. The number one second choice out of the three was the i530. It smashes. Now I'm talking about, we have six different stores. We've got about 55 some fitters that take this survey. And if all of them are answering in this category and they're picking the i530, there's a reason.
Yeah.
It's not because we're trying to tout Ping. It's just because that in that category, it is phenomenal.
Sure.
And I'll put that in a lot of people's hands, even a higher handicap hand, because I can get ball speed, I can get launch, and I can get spin. So if I get to control a little bit more about what's happening and I maintain ball speed, it's a great combination. So there are, the golf club doesn't matter until it matters what you're doing with it. So I would look at it more as, I'm going to put a club in your hand regardless of who and what you do with it that I think is going to try to help you the way you do it.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Did you see any, like when I think of the last year, and I think we'll have a whole separate conversation around putting, but one of the things I saw was a lot more people using, call it like higher lofted woods. Yeah. Like 7 woods, and I've even seen like some 9 woods creep into the bag. I saw Scottie Scheffler put a 7 wood in play at Torrey this week.
Yep.
What if anything did you attribute that to? Is it because 7 woods have been around for a while, right? Yeah. But like more people you're starting to see go driver, 3 wood, 7 wood, or driver, mini driver, 7 wood, like I do, as opposed to maybe having a driving iron or something in the bag, like. Is that pretty common as well, and why?
You've just kind of explained the whole point I was trying to make, and that is I don't really care what's in that bag if it's doing the job we're asking it to do. It's just that desired outcome to it. So a 7 wood's usually got a little bit more loft. Great. And it's compared to a hybrid, it's usually a little bit longer in length, so the club's longer. Swing speed can be higher. Center of mass is a little bit back. More ball speed. Like, it performs differently. It's not a 3 hybrid, which is still 21 degrees. It's the idea, or even a 3 iron that can get to 21 degrees. So it's kind of almost throwing the number on the bottom out and saying, well, what purpose does it fill, or where am I going to find this in my bag? Like, where would this benefit? And I think that's really the whole point. As you come into a fitting, we've got a club, a swing, and a ball. And really, we're just trying to marry those three things up between the technology that we've got versus the technique you're using. And sometimes a 7 wood works. People come in all the time, I can't stand a hybrid, don't want to hit it. Great. Let's try something different. And that's just what it comes down to. And so I think that's where technology has taken us, is to give us more options. And now everyone pretty much had a 7 wood. Now everyone's getting a little bit more, say, fine-tuned around the 7 wood. All right, well, let's make sure that we got extra stiff shafts because strong swings might launch it a little low and need more height. But it's more forgiving and goes a little bit longer than a hybrid. So I love it to come in on, like for you, it probably comes in on a par 5. Great.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a 240 club, super high in the air, can stop, it spins.
Yeah, and that could be a 190 club for someone that might have half your swing speed.
Yeah.
But guess what? It goes up, it comes down, and it stops on a dime.
The same thing.
Right. And so that's where I look at any club for that matter in any of these categories, is just trying to marry up the technology and the technique that you've got.
Mm-hmm. What about the mini driver phenomenon? Yeah. I've got one in my bag. I see that it's become a lot more common, and obviously there's the, you know, I've explained it a couple times on the podcast and to others about like why to game a mini driver. I think it's a no brainer if you hit your actual driver far, because I don't think many people would hit a deck 3-wood. Now you can get to the arguments around like, do you like a 3-wood or mini driver better? But in general, like that seemed to be one of the trends of last year too. Like TaylorMade was kind of the first one with it out, but now I know Callaway's got one. PXG has one. Yeah. There's a ton of manufacturers.
Titleist is coming out with one.
Yeah, Titleist is coming out with one. So talk maybe a little bit about the mini driver, and then let's also for the audience kind of talk about why somebody should use it, and then maybe like when it doesn't make sense.
So the first thing I would say about a mini driver is the same conversation we just had. So kind of back up on that real quick. I need a club to do something for me, right? Like I have maybe a space, I have a gap. The two things that influence the shot that you're going to hit at any one point is the type of loft on the club you have when you hit it and the type of ball speed you see coming off of it, right? So loft is going to impact the launch and spin. Ball speed is going to impact a lot more of the distance factor, but they're all combined. It's a blend. A mini driver is great for someone who doesn't necessarily hit a 3-wood at 15 degrees all that great. Like you want it for a tee shot. You want to get some distance out of it, but it's a little too high. It's a little too spinny. So a mini driver can get lofted, but essentially they're somewhere around 11, 12, 13 degrees with adjustability. So you can even move it from that perspective. So when I start looking at a mini driver, the question becomes, well, is a 3-wood out of the bag off the tee? Because if the 3-wood is only a fairway club and you're getting height on it, you probably still keep it in the bag.
Yeah.
But you weren't. Like
I never used mine in the fairway because I hit the ball far enough that on par fives, I was having 240 and not 270.
Yeah. And that's where it becomes an advantage. So when you start talking about drivers, if you're carrying the ball 310, going out about 340, like, you know, an aggressive swing, we've seen a lot of mini drivers in the bag of the player that goes, you know, 330, 340 off the tee. Because now you have a club that you can put up and go about 300 off the tee.
Yeah.
But it's more forgiving. It's got a bigger face. It's a little easier to control. You have launch and spin characteristics that you can maneuver with it.
Yeah. Shorter par fours. It's a fairway finder.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it. Now there's the other side of that too, which is where as your swing starts to get slower through aging, the ball starts to fly lower. And so one of the things that we do find, longer clubs that may be a little heavier are harder to control. They're harder to swing. For someone that's maybe lost swing speed, you get to a certain point where that mini driver's got 11 and a half, 12, 13 degrees, and it's a little shorter, so it's maybe even a little easier to control. You can hit it higher, longer, and straighter with a mini driver than maybe even your own driver. And so there's a space for it depending on where you are. I think in my own game, like, I hit the driver far enough that a 3-wood's still a useful tool from the fairway until it's not enough loft. And then I'll go to a 4-wood or a 5-wood or whatever it is. Another one that's really caught on just right after that was we've seen a lot more 4-woods. We're seeing a lot more.
Yeah, I saw Ping just came out with an actual 4-wood.
At 17 degrees. And they used to do that too. 16 and a half in many of the other manufacturers. Or even they'll do they'll do a 3-wood high launch that's 16 and a half with adjustability.
Mm-hmm. Callaway's got one of those.
Yeah. And so again, it's like, all right, I might have a driver, I might have a mini driver, I might have a 4-wood, I might have a 7-wood. You might fill the bag out with other clubs that you maybe haven't had. If you played a lot of golf and you started many, many years ago, you might have even started with those same sorts of clubs because they've still been around. It kind of refreshes. So I think in our fitting process too, that one of the things that we try to look at is we look at that whole perspective is like, look on both sides of it saying, the last fitting I had, didn't have a lot of launch, right? Swing speed's down. So we hit a 7-wood, a 5-wood and a 4-wood, lightweight senior flex. So just in the club speed is the same on every one of them. Ball speed's the same on every one of them. The launch is really close to the same. I don't put three clubs in the bag. We put one because you got one club that does everything. And so you almost have to back off. And the longest club in your bag after the driver might be a 7-wood because it's got enough loft to get it in the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Going driver 7-wood.
Yeah. The other thing I think that one of the things I talk about in a fitting is that the carry distance is always the most important distance.
Yes.
Because the total distance of a shot will always be influenced by the environment of the day. It could be weather, it could be the course, it could just be a bad day, a bad hit, whatever it is. But carry distance is something that we try to gain in consistency. And a lot of times people will come in and they'll say, well, you know, I'm 20 yards farther with this club. Yeah, but it also lands 5 yards shorter and runs out. So the hole that's got water in front of the green, you can't use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that just changed my game a few years ago was that realization of like playing the carry number game. I mean, I just used to never, I don't know why I didn't think about it. It feels like it's a golf 101 type thing, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand that you need to know your carry distances, not your total distances. It's completely different.
I think if someone comes into one of our fittings at Second Swing, and many, like, I don't know anyone that doesn't come in with an open mind. They really do. Because there, you can go out and you can do all the research you want, but at the end of the day, you've got to hit the club.
Yeah.
We got to find out what that does. So one of the things I know, and all of our fitters are really good at, is kind of presenting an education in terms of what's going on and what we want to look for, what we want to see with it. And in the game, I say, should is a swear word. Don't tell me what something should do. It's what it does. And that's really what we're trying to get at is, okay, what does this do for us? Should is always one where, like, hey, if I can move the club 15 yards or 15 miles an hour faster, yeah, I would hit it farther. I just can't. Like, that's just, you know, not part of the deal. So,
all right. So the big one, lie angle balance putters, or for maybe different term, straight to straight. I've seen Odyssey talk about
square
lately,
to square.
Square to square.
Yep.
Let's talk about just putters in general, because I think the phenomenon around putters that makes them so different than every other club in the bag is that, like, when it comes to pros, it's the one club in their bag that they usually either don't have a deal on, or if they do, like, they change very frequently, right? Like, you see a lot of guys change putters.
Or the other way around.
Or never change putters?
Well, like, look over the winner at Torrey Pines for the Genesis.
Who, Ludwig?
Yeah.
Hibbert? He's been playing the same thing for...
He has the Odyssey Versa with micro hinge from, it's got to be, what, 4 years
forever
old?
Forever ago.
4 years old?
Yeah, which is a long time for a putter and a PGA Tour player's bag.
It can be, but even for that, is like, if you really look at the bags, you know, there are guys that want to switch. You will see guys that will switch it up. But overall, if you do something well and you're comfortable and you're in a good spot, you got to leave that.
Yeah.
And I would say the same of all clubs, but, you know.
Yeah. Generally speaking.
Generally.
Yeah. But I do think with putters, and even over the last year or two, seen a lot of pros change. And obviously Lab has been the horse that has led the lie angle balance or square to square. Obviously LAB, lie angle balance.
Right.
But you've seen the guys like Ricky and Adam Scott, a ton of guys switch over. And so I think generally, you know, a lot of people want to try, like, you know, what are the pros doing? You see a lot of guys go to broomstick and all these things. So let's talk real quick about, like, what this means. You kind of gave me a nice educational overview, because I think what most people would consider is, like, you know, square to square, straight forward, straight back, letting the putter do the work, right? Trying to take the hands out of it.
Yeah.
You know, feeling like that thing is swinging on a pendulum, and, you know, get your line and go. Let's talk a little bit about what the technology is and what it is not. And then maybe talk about some of the different kind of, you know, putter heads and manufacturers out there.
So there's three basics if you want to talk about the face, right? So there's face balance, which is where the shaft and the club head are kind of balanced so that the face just sits straight up. And what that means is the weight's kind of equally distributed amongst it. Okay.
Basically, like in the toe and in the heel.
Yeah.
All throughout the putter, so that is not going to,
Yeah. So the whole idea behind this comes down into the few things that you do with the putter, right? You can change its loft by moving your hands forward, backwards. You can change its lie angle. You know, in terms of path, that can be a part of it. And you also have the rotation piece.
Yeah. So, like, a person at home, you know, if you forward press your hands, you're decreasing loft in a putter, right? Like Phil always talked about that little forward press.
Yes.
Decrease loft a little bit. Yeah. You know, if you were to do the opposite, increase loft, lie angle, you know, if you're putting and you kind of moved your hands down.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's going to bring the toe up, and then the opposite. If you raise them, it's going to make it more flat.
But you can also do that in motion. Because
in your actual putting stroke.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you take the putter outside, you know, it gets flatter. As you're pulling it back inside, it gets more upright. So like these are all things that are changing in motion. That's the technique part. What I look at is like lab is really kind of set the stage for this fad, but it's not necessarily a fad in that it's popular because people ask about it. I'd say the last 24 putter fittings, I mean, there is not one person that hasn't come in and asked me about the lab. Like, okay, I really want to try this lab putter. I'm struggling with my putting. So let's look at it a couple of different ways. The first is that when you look at what's going on with that golf ball, we've got to mitigate the loft to get us a really good launch over spin and keeping it down the line. So really good putters are good at being able to control that loft so that it keeps the launch low, gets the ball spinning over the top, forward spin, and then also keeps momentum moving down its line. From that regard, lab or lie angle balanced has been around for, well, was it 5 years now? 6 years maybe? Something like that? They've been around a while.
Yeah, I want to say I think I got the first, like the original lab when it came out. That was about 5 or 6 years ago. So call it 6 or 7. They've probably been around-ish.
But the technology has been out a lot longer than that. So what I'm saying is that a lab putter is what we consider a toe-up putter. So are the square-to-squares. Bettinardi's got one called the Antidote. You know, go down the list. There's two things about the lab putter. One, the shaft, the face of the putter face is out in front of the shaft of the putter. So it's on set. Okay? That's one. Two, the way that it's the position, the weight is positioned is the opposite of a toe hang. It's not face balanced, it's toe hang. The one way where all the weight is kind of positioned in the toe so that it moves down.
And like, for example, most Scotty Camerons, right?
Yeah, a Newport, an Answer. Yeah. But they also have the shaft out in front of the face. That's what starts to create some of that face balanced versus toe hang. And the same is the opposite is true then is if I get the face out in front of the shaft, I can start to get the toe moving the other way. So what we're really talking about is torque. And torque's the twisting motion. And in a general sense, a lot of these putters are called low torque. A zero torque would mean no twist. So no matter how I put the putter down, it would stay that way. And none of these putters do that unless you have a face balanced, expecting it to stay face balanced. All of the rest of them are going to move to their position of the physics, the weighting.
Yeah, so the way that you explained it to me was like, you know, everybody's, you know, is lab's famous for that, like the revealer, right, where they do that.
Yeah.
And really what they're showing is, call it corrective balance.
Yeah, that, the corrective, you know, torque is what they talk about. Yeah.
If you move it, you know, straight forward, straight back, obviously it'll be great. But if you move it way out to the right and come back, it's going to correct to center.
Right.
Or if you pull it all the way inside when you come through, it will correct back to center.
And we've had corrective torque that goes the other way with anything that is toe down and not face balanced. It's just the opposite effect. So we've had corrective torque in the opposite direction. And now if we get an opportunity to get the face out in front, move that shaft back a little, we have the weight is kind of toe up in terms of the balance. We generally, I say generally because it also depends on what you do with it too, you see putts that would tend to go more right than left where you have a toe down. They have a tendency to go maybe a little bit more left. But no matter what, it's also still how you use it. And the only thing that I look at with that is like, again, I need the right loft to create the right launch to create the overspin. And one of the difficult parts about putters like a lab putter is it's not available to change its loft. So if you're someone if you're someone that kind of presents a lot of loft to the situation, you're going to have to either change the way you putt, like technique wise, or try something different because you can't change that. That's not a changeable thing in the design. Neither is the Odyssey isn't, and the Bettinardi isn't either.
So why is that? Why have Lab, Odyssey, Bettinardi, like, do they think they've cracked the code on like what makes it good, or like why do they make that? Because every other putter, you can change the loft and the lie.
Well, I think first of all, in order to get it, like as we talk about it in terms of the legitimate style of the putter to begin with, all of those are straight shafted putters or center shafted putters. So when we start talking about the position of the shaft as it enters in. The reason that they're very low torque is because the center of gravity is right below the shaft. So that's a center of gravity, which is why the face is out in front and where the shaft
is. So if you were to change that, you're basically getting rid of that technology.
That's correct. Right. So none of this is good versus bad. It's just different versus different. And I'd say that the most important thing in a putter fitting, because we've talked putters before, the most important thing that you have is confidence in the way that that thing looks and rolls.
Yeah, and so we set up.
Yeah, we never want to mess around with that in terms of once we got something good, you want to be there. But we all know that, again, the putter of the day can be a choice based on maybe how confident we are or comfortable we are, or, you know, we've played a couple rounds and things aren't working out. But remember, the club is never the variable. It's only the way we use it. So the club's always changing what it does based on us, not the club, right? We're not changing, you know, we're changing its loft. We're changing its lie. We're changing its face angle in the way that we use it.
So when it comes to the pros then, like, what would your diagnosis be on, like, why, you know, let's use Adam Scott, for example, because he's obviously a big lab guy, made the change. I've seen him in the broomstick and trying different heads and stuff. Somebody at that level, like, clearly has been winning on the PGA Tour for years, right?
Yeah.
Is making changes like this. I mean, is he at the point that he's almost changing the way that he putts to the putter? Or how does that work?
It's a little unique when you start talking about Adam Scott, because he's still in that broomstick, that long, long putter style, right? He hasn't really changed that. He anchored it when, you know, he won his Masters. That was an anchor, and that was a thing back then, and obviously, we tried to get rid of it. He tried to go to something different to try to recreate that feel, but it wasn't anchored. He went back to the long putter, doesn't anchor it. He's also, I mean, I'm just guessing, he's probably hitting a couple hundred putts a day.
Yeah.
You know, so, or at the very least, 100 putts a day without question. And so he's fine-tuning his craft. We're not, like, if someone has the ability to get after it, they can kind of start to make anything work really well. But, you know, we're just trying to be consistent. I would say a good example might be a Ricky Fowler.
Sure.
Because we saw Ricky Fowler with a very traditional, you know, answer style, Newport style, that was supposedly, it was one of the backups that Scotty Cameron had made for Tiger that had just happened to be sitting there. And Ricky says, well, let me putt with it. He does and says, this is awesome. And he goes on this incredible golf's, you know, this tear through the...
Got second in, like, all four majors and
I think he was top five in all of them.
The players or...
Something. But, you know, so he's using that putter, which is a unique style to it, but he's using it in a way that he was winning with, he was comfortable with, until it wasn't. And that's really what it comes down to, until it wasn't. So then he goes to the Jailbird by Odyssey, which is Wyndham Clark went to it, Keegan Bradley was in it. We're also seeing these guys in lab putters now as well. And the reality of it is, like, generally, they wanted a certain look to it. They want a certain, whether it's alignment or feel or, but the one thing that really good putters do of any handicap style is they slightly deal off the putter and they hit it just a little high of center.
And why is that?
Well, first of all, that's the spot where you're probably going to get the right type of launch. Because if I've got 3 degrees and I turn it to one and it comes off at like 1.5 degrees of launch, it's a great spot. That gets the ball up on top.
Yeah, and most standard putters are 3 degrees of loft.
They are.
So
yeah, and then on top of that, if I've got that in a little higher spot, it's very rarely will I have more backspin. It's that I almost might create more overspin or top spin to it, if you will. And forward spin is really what we call it. But it's the only club in the bag that actually automatically has that given the right kind of loft, right? We don't have forward spin in any other club. So that's one of the reasons why, like, they want to be in the high spot. And if you look, you'll see this. It's pretty common if you see pictures, you know, on, like, Instagram, you'll see the, hey, what's in the bag? And you'll see the wear mark on the kind of the high spot.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Tiger Scotty, it's almost like high,
just a little center,
towards
high,
the toe, maybe touch.
If you control, this goes for an elite player or just a player in general. That if you control the loft of the club at the moment of impact, you'll have more control on the shot. Yeah. And that's what it comes down to in putting. So it's the same thing. What I say is, I look at this as does this benefit you? So the first thing I'd like to get out of someone is, you know, you're in for a putter fitting. What prompted this? You know, what are you doing? What are you seeing? What would you like to try? And inevitably, the lab has become hot. Well, because we're seeing it on the tour, and Zinger can attest to this because he's always said this, right? What you see on the PGA Tour gets you to go to that company. And then once you go to that company, now you're looking at what they market. It's their marketing. And one of the things we stay out of at Second Swing is we're non-biased to this. It doesn't matter if you want a lab or not, or TaylorMade, or like there's just so many different putters out there.
Yeah.
To me, it matters is, does this work better? Does this get you more consistent? Are you going to be able to enjoy the game? And in some cases, it might be one putt aside. It might be two, you know, putts aside. I think for me, if you three putt less, period, you know, you're going to get better. And yeah, we all do that. It's like we all have a longer putt and it's not quite as close. And it's the next putt's a little bit, you know, not as a little longer, a little tougher. And we miss that one. And we're like, okay, my putting's off. Well, statistically, the best players in the world would never make the first putt. We know that. They might be a little closer on the second one. And even then, statistically, you know, a 5, 6, 7 footer for a professional, they have a higher chance of making it than we do, right? As someone that's even a zero or a plus handicap.
Start by hitting it to 30 feet, not 60 feet. Solve your putting pretty
so
quick.
So that is actually, statistically, if you look back on it, that's where you're going to gain your best. So a lot of the times you can continue to putt the way you're putting, but if you wedge it, you know, 3 foot, 4 foot closer, if you've got 2 and 3 footers instead of 5 and 6 footers, you're going to make more putts.
Yeah, yeah, naturally. Well, let's pivot then and let's talk irons, because most of our questions were actually about irons. So the first thing I want to talk about, one, have all the new irons come out for 2025, basically? Or have the Srixons come out? Are those still waiting?
Yep, everything's out.
Everything's out?
Trying to think of what's not.
I think the Mizuno, the S3s just came out.
Everything's out.
Right? Everything's out.
From an iron perspective, I don't think, from my knowledge, and I'm not breaking, you know, there's embargoes I have to be careful of. There's nothing that I know of that's not out.
Okay. Yeah, so everything's pretty much out for the year.
Yep.
We had Jamie Rue, friend of the pod, been on multiple times. He wants to know what you think about the Bettinardi irons. So they're new, new to the market. I've heard good things just on reviews. I've only hit them once or twice in his simulator, but he's curious what you think about them compared to maybe some of the other bigger brands. Because another kind of topic that I want to touch on as we kind of weave through this is, like you said, marketing in golf is king, right? Like, for whatever reason, I always think of Mizuno when it comes to one of the best club manufacturers that never seems to market, but is always one of the best testers, like in the bays, all throughout the back.
Yeah.
And so a good example would be like Bettinardi irons. Like, obviously they're new, so people don't think about Bettinardi when it comes to irons.
Yeah.
They're known for putters. But like, have you fit them? Mm-hmm. What are you seeing? Like, you know, and I know irons can be a little bit ambiguous, but just generally speaking, thoughts on the Bettinardi irons.
Sure. I would say, first we got to put those into a category, and that is the difference between, something that's forged. That is something that's stamped out as a piece. A lot of the drivers and many of the irons that are deep cavity backs, they have a forged piece. In other words, the face on the driver is forged and they weld it to the body, right? Because a lot of the drivers nowadays have carbon fiber and, you know, different metals and such.
Yep.
But when we talk about something like the Bettinardi irons, even their wedges too, they're forgings, and there's a difference that way. So a forging is where you're taking the steel or the billet and you're actually heating it up and stamping it into a form. And so you're doing the same thing when something's forged. It's just like a piece or a part. In this case, the whole head is a forging. In other words, the whole head is kind of stamped out into it. And I think if you were to go straight across the board in terms of the quality of the forgings, you can pick every company, and every company has a high-quality forging. So I wouldn't put Bettinardi up or down compared to someone. What it offers is it might be a feel, it might be a look, it might be a performance aspect. And so I certainly put them up there with anything because they tend to be soft, which is when you have a softer steel and you can stamp it into a form, it tends to be a little softer. A lot of the forged pieces, not only are they forged into the piece, but then they're also usually brazened or heat treated to make them very, very strong so that they don't bend and they don't break. And that's kind of the piece to, if you think about, would be a good example. The i530 by Ping has a forged face, but it's also heat treated. So it feels really good because of some of the other things they do with the body of the club and the cavity in the back, and they kind of throw, they blow some plastic in so it deadens the sound. It makes it feel really good. Mizuno's a good example. Their high-end forgings all have a copper underlay. And that copper underneath, before they put the coating, the top coating, the gray there, the silver, the chrome that we see, that creates a softness, right? So every steel has a hardness on the hardness scale, and forgings tend to be a little softer on that. Then you add on top of it that we've got different layers going on the top for sound, that can create the feel. I think Bettinardi irons are phenomenal. As compared to anyone else, if they fit your eye, they look good, they feel good, and we got good numbers with them, then more power to you. But when you talk about marketing, what's the number one ball in golf?
Well, I think it actually is the number one ball in golf, but I would say Titleist.
Yeah, but that's their marketing.
But like, I think when you go through all the testings, like, you know, I follow My Golf Spy, who I also think is pretty unbiased in their testing.
Yeah.
It's always Titleist. It's the most played ball by pros and any type of, you know, Korn Ferry Tour, like on all throughout all the tours.
Elite.
It's Titleist.
It's the top amateur ball. It's the top professional ball across everything.
And the only one that could, I think, shake a stick at it's TaylorMade, because they're the only one, other one that has a, what is it, urethane cover or urethane cover?
Yeah. Well, they all have urethane covers. There's also a difference to the urethane and how they apply it. I think Callaway, the Chrome Tours are phenomenal golf balls. I think the Bridgestones are great. I think the Sorixons are great. They're all great. What you have to find is you have to find what works well amongst the different parts of your game. Because if driving's an issue off the tee, you might want to find a ball that's better off the tee for you. If, you know, the chipping and the putting seems to be an issue, well, then let's find something that's better chipping and putting. And then this is kind of the golf ball conversation, but I'll get back to the iron side of it. It's going to be the same thing there. Like if they're using the exact same material, and, you know, many, many years ago, the forgings for a lot of these high-end type blades that we saw, they all came from the same foundry.
Yeah.
So like when we start looking at it, I remember, this is a great story, long time regional rep for Ping, in a conversation back when there were forgings and they were doing a lot of their stuff in foundries over in China, different parts of the building would be for different companies. And this is long before cell phones. So they'd have to call into a hardwired phone. And there'd be an office. And so if someone called into that office and you happened to be around the office, he said, hey, they're looking for Mark over at, you know, let's say Callaway. And he goes, yep, I'll go over. So the guy from, you know, like a Ping or a Titleist or a TaylorMade might walk over to the Callaway part of the building, you know, knock on the door. Hey, Mark, you got a phone call from corporate they got one phone, but that's
all the same place.
Yeah. They would all go out to eat together. They would all stay in the same hotel. They would all take the same flight. Like this was kind of a thing. It has gotten away from that slightly, but we're just using high-end equipment. So none of it's bad.
So what it comes down to, look, feel,
yeah,
and probably, like you said, some of the differences in manufacturers where, like, for example, I hit Ping drivers better than any other driver. Yep. And I think it's because they're more fade bias. I don't know if that's true or not, but generally speaking, I think they're a little bit more fade bias, and I like to see the ball move right. I don't need it like hot off the face like the TaylorMade. I've always hit the Ping driver the best.
Yeah, and so it's kind of what you're looking for. But irons are a tricky situation because if we want to talk about technology, I would say metal woods have been the highest amount of technology that has changed in the face, in the construction, in the carbon fibers, in the weighting, in the shapes, in... I kind of put shafts as a second to metal woods overall, because if I talk about shafts, right, like 95% of the best players in the world at the elite level have played a Dynamic Gold X100, and that shaft hasn't necessarily changed from what it is since once it was created over 50 years ago. Like if the vast majority of the best players play the same shaft for over 50 years and it hasn't necessarily changed a ton, there's something to be said, like all these other, well, what about this shaft? What about this shaft? What about this shaft? So it is possible, and it is a huge conversation piece. We can get down a wormhole on that side of it. But when it comes to irons, again, you kind of have three different categories. You kind of have a much more traditional, call it blades, slight cavity back. You have something that might be a little bit more hollowed, not quite as big, or we call that the player or pro style, where it's got face, thin face ball speed, and then you get into something that might be bigger. So the face is bigger, the ball speed, you know, you can kind of get ball speed any which way you want, and then the sole gets a little bit bigger, and the idea to that is ball speed. So when we talk about forgiveness, it's ball speed. If you miss the sweet spot, how far is it going to go? And for that, I think the other idea to that is what we lack as we talk about club types and then handicaps, and this goes for anyone, whether you're talking about a driver, you're talking about an iron, you're talking about a wedge or even a putter, the feedback. I think one of the most important things of any club that you got in your bag is its feedback. What is it telling you when you hit it? And if you don't care what it tells you, great. But like, I know you and I know me, and I want to know exactly where I hit it.
Yeah.
Because if I
can feel on my irons, yeah, if I hit totally. It off the toe.
Right.
Or if I hit a little fat or thin or whatever it is, I know exactly where the ball's going.
And I don't care what that club is, as long as if that's what you want out of it, because that's what I want. So I tend to be in clubs that give me feedback.
Sure.
Because I just want to know. I can get into clubs where the ball goes, you know, dead straight in a million miles. Like that's not what I'm after.
Yeah.
Because if I hit it on the toe and like I need to know I hit it on the toe to make changes or just to be aware of it. It's like, hey, am I really hitting everything on the toe today? That's kind of a hard piece. Now that's where forgiveness comes in, as we talk about like what game improvement.
Sure.
If you don't care, it doesn't matter, and you hit it on the toe and it still just goes dead straight, well then that's what we're in for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ZX7 irons, Andrew Davidson wants to know about them. Maybe somebody who's thinking about buying them.
Yeah, I think what they did, two really important pieces, two things to that. One, they added more mass, so it is a little heavier. I feel like the ZX Mark II and the ZX were a little bit of a lighter head weight, and so I wasn't necessarily a huge fan myself, but they're also bigger. Like, as in the actual size, it was like a larger club head, but still, you know, slim and a cavity back. That larger club head actually produced maybe a little bit more forgiveness and direction, because you could miss it a little bit off, still get ball speed, but it didn't like move offline as much.
Sure.
So I think what they've done in the new one is they've maintained the shape in terms of size. It's very forgiving in terms of ball speed, even on misses. They've also kind of used the iframe technology that they've got with it, the forged to something, the Z forged. Yeah. I'm forgetting my technology notes, but they've also taken that bar in the back and moved it up a little bit. So you now have a little bit more mass, and they've also moved it up. So now even the miss hits a little higher and off to the side are even better. And so I would say without question, it's not even close. I've sold more iron sets in the ZXi7 than anything else that
over
I've even.
Over the pings? Over the 530s?
Yes. Now I have sold quite a few of the 530s, but I'm talking about, this is more of a specific club type, right? Like the 530 is usually just ball speed. The ZXi7 is definitely a ball speed, but also workability, feedback, spin. It's got four more degrees of loft, so it's got launch. Yeah, it's a much better, depending on the player and, sure, and the technique.
Yeah. Jackson asks, how do you decide what swing weight is right for somebody?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we all kind of start as a baseline, and then things change depending on what we see. I look at the swing weight of the club as a factor at influencing the way that it moves. And the first thing that really we talk about is when I start looking at swing weight, It really has a lot to do with the transition of the swing from the top point back down. So when you pull on that handle and start the club back on its way down, that's the transition piece that I'm looking at in terms of swing weight. So for instance, this is all, but it also includes shaft weight. It includes head weight. It includes grip weight.
Yeah.
And so for instance, if someone comes in as a customer and they have like the, I'm going to call out like a Lampkin or a Golf Pride Jumbo Grip, the raw weight of those things can get upwards of 80 grams, whereas the standard can be in the 50s to 60s.
Yeah, so I'll change your swing weight by 6-7 points, right?
Huge.
Yeah.
So if all of a sudden we've got this club balance and you're saying, well, you know what, I need a jumbo grip, and you throw these heavy jumbo grips on, swing weight's off. So that matters. We talked about it about with putting the other day. We put some lead tape on the putter for you.
Yeah.
And that's the same scenario. So the swing weight got heavier. When you have a heavier swing weight, it's harder to just kind of move it all over the place.
Yeah.
So it kind of, in a way, that mass is important because we want to create consistency. One of our fitters was doing some testing before I left the store tonight, and he was doing it based on the idea of like testing graphite and steel. And right away, it was funny because he said the one that felt the best was a Dynamic Gold S300, which is the heaviest shaft on the market. It's about 128, 29 grams. So from an iron, talking about irons for a second. Well, you throw graphite that's 80 grams, totally different ball game. Like all of a sudden this back here feels totally different.
Yeah, it's a completely new club.
Yeah. So swing weight is very important to the thing that I think is probably most important, and that is the feedback. So if you're looking for certain types of feedback, if you want the club to perform, we want to be able to try to make that adjustment. There are, unfortunately, there are not a lot of great options amongst the companies unless you get to a different model style. So for instance, the mass of an iron head that's a blade or a cavity back is usually more than something that's got like a hollow face, like a more of a game improvement style. Those clubs tend to weigh less.
The game improvement ones.
The game improvement ones. But we also want to look at it. And any conversation I have, I shout out for Aaron Roth. So if he does watch this, he knows. He says it's not a club unless it's got lead tape on it.
True.
So
got to put lead tape on that somewhere.
I think in my own game, I've known this over a longer period of time. Any of the testing I does says, you know, go to 100-gram shaft, go to something that's going to maybe kick a bit more. You can maybe swing it a little bit faster. But I just feel the most comfortable with a Dynamic Gold because of its weight. When I get it in that swing and I start to pull on it, I know where it is. And so, yes, swing weight's very important. And it's something that we can sometimes do. We can definitely sometimes do that depending on the type of company we're dealing with. Because there's some companies where they give you this one model and that's it. That's the swing weight.
Sure.
We're done.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think that what standard in irons is like right around a D2, and then you get into fairway woods and drivers, it's about D4, D5, somewhere in there. That's like what standard is.
Well,
I saw Scheffler's seven wood was D4.
That's probably if you want a lighter swing and you're starting to use lighter components, like as you get into more senior ladies type slower swing speeds, you're going to get lighter. It's going to be in the D0s or the C9s or even the C8s. It's going to get a lot lighter because you need to be able to generate some of that speed. And that's the other thing too, as I talk about this with people in the fitting, is mass equals, or force equals mass times acceleration. If I don't have enough mass, it's not going to be easier to accelerate that. So I want to be able to make that weight more productive for you during the swing. And I don't need to lose it kind of on the top or at the back, and I don't need to lose it at the end of it. I want that thing building so that it gets to impact and gives you the best result possible.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what B-Bark is asking here, but he says, maybe you can figure this out. Is driving iron the only option, obviously outside of lessons, for somebody with a steep angle of attack? So I don't know if he's talking about like that over, you know, like a hybrid or a wood is what I would assume he's getting to.
No, he's kind of on the right track with that. So there's a couple things that determine the steep angle of attack. number one, is it steep because we're coming across the ball, or is it steep because we're just trapping the ball? So kind of ball position makes a play in that too. What I would say about the angle of attack is it's in a very important piece. And generally speaking, whenever you start to get into hybrids and fairway woods, the goal of a hybrid is to launch higher than an iron. The goal of a fairway is to launch higher than a hybrid.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing a steep angle of attack with a lot of spin, you do want to try to lower the loft of that. So you can get into a driving iron to try to do that, because the spin will help create the lift. So if you're down and you spin, now if you're down on it and it doesn't spin, totally a different ballgame. Because now it doesn't lift, it just drives forward and drops. And that's why we have to kind of take a look at what options are available to it. But also, a lot of people swing differently depending on the type of club they have. So some people might swing downward on a wedge, to an iron, even to a hybrid. And then all of a sudden you get to like a fairway wood or a driver and they start swinging up on it. And that's where you have to be careful, like the upward swing versus the downward swing. When does it happen? And that's the technique we talk about. That's the swing part of the club swing and ball. And the real answer is yes, it could be a very viable option to it. So what we have to do is, you know, you want to be able to hit some things and see what's going on with that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Now I'm curious, this is more for just me in general, but it sounds like, you know, a lot of people are starting to get into the, I want to say more like configuring their clubs, but, you know, like less buying stock stuff, right? I think people mm-hmm. are generally starting to understand, like, you don't just buy something off the rack in golf anymore. You don't just walk into Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a set of, you know, whatever irons. Like, a lot of people go and get fit now.
Yep.
How important is it? You know, obviously there's a lot of things that you guys have in the bay, but, you know, for, let's like take me, I'm a psycho, right? For example, I use a very specific grip.
Mm-hmm.
The lengths and lofts and lies of my mm-hmm. clubs are definitely not standard. How much can you actually get fit for in the bay and like see what you're testing? And then how much does that change, like, you know, when you put it into your kind of setup, right? So I think of like a 7-iron when I go to get fit with you guys. It's a standard, you know, length, like it's going to be a standard 7-iron head, but I play something that's 3 upright and maybe a little bit weaker in loft, or sorry, stronger in loft.
Yep.
And I've got like different grips, right? So now it's effectively a different club. But how much of the data am I going to see that's still, you know, the same? And what should I be looking for when I'm getting fit? I think a lot of people have that question. Like,
right.
There's only so much that you can configure when you get fit, and there's a lot of stuff that you change after the fact.
Yeah, I actually think you're you're pretty common in that, because when we look at it from a perspective of a fitting, we're actually trying to decipher the code. And that is, you've got a club, you got a swing, and you got a ball. So let's get something in your hand. Let's see how it works and what happens when you hit it. And that's not a, you know, generality. That's an individual thing. It's why we have so many different options. I mean, you've been in our tour van. Like, we have so many options that will, I'm sure there are options that'll never get put together. But take this as an example. A lot of the companies, when you talk about like driver or irons, even wedges for that matter, even like every category in their bag, every company's got like 4 or 5 models. Now, the pro or low handicap style is usually a low spin. And with that, it's usually a very heavy and usually a very stiff shaft. We'll also probably see an 8 degree, 9 degree, maybe 10.5 degree, but we're not going to see a 12 degree in that. So then you come into more of the middle, which is maybe just more game improvement, max forgiveness type. Well, now we're going to see something probably 9, 10 and a half, 12. We're going to see, it could be, you know, it could be extra stiff to regular to even maybe even in a senior. So the models that they're making and the choices they're using, even for their stock options, are really trying to fit like the player type, the player swing that we're going to see with some of those. So if I need something lighter weight, I'm not going to grab the heavy head and a light shaft. That's usually not the most productive combination. We're probably going to try to balance that. And that's absolutely a part of the deal. And what I would say is that, you know, someone coming in, it's the ability to start to look at, you have to be able to kind of see where you are to start seeing where you're going to be able to go with it.
Sure.
Because sometimes we come in and we have these assumptions of, I need low spin. I need low loft. Well, the hard part is when you start talking about the technology from the companies, it's like, yeah, but a seven iron is not a seven iron anymore. Yeah, a seven iron can go from, well, it can go, well, even more so. It can, you know, there are stuff, there's seven irons that have 26 degrees of loft. And that's a five iron in my bag, not a seven iron.
Yeah.
And so when you start looking at the loft structure, you start looking at the way that it's designed, you start looking at ball speeds and launches, and like all of those things play in. I would say a common one that happens for us quite a bit is like the launch and spin is usually something we can get ball speed in most senses with technology nowadays. What it's very difficult to do is if someone kind of launches it low and doesn't spin, it's really all the companies have all started making high launch. Mm. All of them. They know that loft is a huge key to this. And so they can't just keep getting something de-lofted and get the same result out of it. But what they've done with that is they've also turned a seven iron into a six iron, just like you said. But then they've also added another wedge. And a pitching wedge used to be 45, 46 degrees.
Yep.
Well, now that's the gap wedge at 47 degrees in most people's, you know, low lofted sets.
Interesting.
So it's not a, you know, you have to define it. A good example, I had my dad in, we did a fitting, and we went to some, all the Ping high launch stuff, right? We went the G730, but we also went with every other club. And he's like, well, I need the U wedge. Yeah, but sorry, you know, I want my pitching wedge. He wants the W, he wants the pitching wedge. Yeah, but the new U wedge is the same loft.
Yeah.
You don't need a pitching wedge.
It's a thing. I mean, I will say, though, it's like a mental thing. So for me, like, I play a 46 degree pitching wedge, but it's a 46 degree, like a Ping wedge.
It's a wedge.
It's a 46 degree wedge. It's not the P. And then so I effectively go straight into my nine iron. Right. Like, so I don't have, it's like, it's weird for me and for others when they look at my bag, like, where's your pitching wedge? I'm like, it's right there. It's the 46 degree, like, correct, that's a stock pitching wedge, but it's an actual wedge, so that it kind of, you know, throws people off. It's like, oh, you have a gap between your wedge and your nine irons. Like, no,
do you know,
I don't.
So, you know, why do you have that in your bag? What would be some of the reasons that that's a benefit for you?
Well, so for me, my pitching wedge, here's the reason I did it. A regular pitching wedge, I feel like, is for, you know, it's a more full swing, right? Like, like if you keep part of your set, generally speaking, like, it's a full swing club. For me, I'm trying to have more kind of wedge shots and plays, and like, I like the, you know, a little bit more spin I feel like I get with that one, and I hit more kind of like three-quarter and knockdown shots with it as opposed to more full swings with it.
Totally, and that's exactly why you would have, you, if you've got higher club speeds and we want more control, we're going to get that out of a wedge with spin.
And I would take confidence level too. I mean, just looking at like a, you know, for me, it's kind of like when I have a wedge in my hand, I'm expecting inside of 25 feet, and like, I look at that club differently than I would, you know, my nine iron, where I'm like, you know, play it a little bit more conservatively. Like, I know it's still a nine iron, but like, wedge in my hand, like, here we go. I got four clubs that if I'm hitting them in the greens, I'm feeling pretty good about them.
Yep.
You know, I'm looking to, you know, for sure make a par or try and get a good look at birdie.
It's a part of the, that's a part of the fitting game that we have to get into. And it's, you know, there's so many great tools that we have to kind of start looking at it. We can make projections just based off of some of the clubs that you hit. You could take a pitching wedge and I can, it'll, you know, we have recommendations in terms of the types of wedges you should be playing based on what you're doing with it. We also do the same thing as you get into irons, you get into woods. So we're really going to try to hone in on that. And once we have kind of a baseline in some of the middle of the categories of these things like wedges, irons, fairways, hybrids, drivers, it's kind of game over, because at that point it's like, there's only a certain number of clubs that you can carry at 14. There's also only a certain number of clubs you're ever going to use based on how effective they are.
Yeah.
You know, you still have a 3-wood or a mini driver in your bag. Like, 3-wood's kind of getting to be a little bit more obsolete for me, because I need to carry a lot more club head speed to keep ball speed, to keep launch. Now, off the tee, it's phenomenal because it gets up in the air and it never comes down.
Yeah.
But off the turf, no. So unless I need it for a tee shot, I almost need, you know, I need another fairway in the bag. So maybe getting like a 5-wood in there.
It's pretty interesting. I've noticed since I've been doing Decade, I've probably played 10 rounds this year. I went to Palm Springs, been to Arizona a couple times. And I've noticed that I'm using pretty much every club in my bag when I play, because the driver and the mini driver always get used.
Yeah.
And then the 7-wood will for sure come out on a par five. It just, you know, it's 4 par 5s. It's going to come out on at least one of them.
Yeah.
Putter and all my wedges obviously get used around the greens and then when I'm inside. And then I'll notice, you know, every now and again, I'll hit the 4-iron off a tee, or maybe I hit a really good drive on a par five. And then, you know, everything else in between comes on the par fours. And I noticed that as opposed to last year, I remember I would come in and see you guys and be like, man, I don't use my 3-wood at all, or I don't use this 5-wood that I got because I thought I needed a 260 club, but I don't. Like, right. I just don't need it. And so I have found, you know, now that I'm getting to a point where I'm actually using all the clubs in my bag, like, they all serve a purpose.
Yeah.
Like, for everybody listening, like, if you're not, it's like that shirt you have in your closet. Like, somebody told me, you know, like, at the beginning of every year, like, you should take your shirts and turn them backwards on the hanger. And then at the end of the year, if you haven't turned the hanger around, get rid of it. Like, if you haven't used it for a year, you're not going to use it.
Yeah.
If there's a club in your bag you're not using, like, you're probably not going to use it. Go replace it with something you're actually going to use.
Yeah. Well, I always use my waggle, by the way.
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of fitting? I'm in the snowflakes for, like,
it looks great.
Is it like minus five?
And I saw, like, schools and stuff are closing
tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's Minnesota in the dead of winter.
I know. To wrap up, last question for all the people out there. I want to talk the new driver heads, new driver shafts. It's always the number one thing, you know, every year, the new drivers.
Yeah.
What are you guys seeing early on in your fitting bays? How are all the new heads? I feel like, you know, last year there was, like, a lot of hype around new drivers, and this year just kind of feels like there's not as much. So let's talk drivers real quick and then shafts and then we'll wrap up.
Well, drivers, I would say, I think the companies have made a driver for every golfer. Now, real quick short story. When I first started, you know, working at Second Swing, one of our fitters at the time took me into the fitting bay and says, here, well, let's do this. And he fit me into like a 10.5-degree driver. And for me, I looked at it and I'm like, I've been playing like 8, 8.5, maybe 9. I try to, like, I come up through the ball, but I don't spin. Well, I doesn't spin because it's 8 degrees. So I always kind of felt like it was getting up, spinning, and dropping out of the air. Well, spin was the issue. Well, now I'm in a 10-degree driver, and I could probably be in a 10.5-degree driver because now it just stays in the air another 20 yards with the spin. And he said to me at the time, he says, you know what? Someone's going to make a driver for you that's going to work better in the next 3 to 5 years, but there just isn't one available. So, and he was dead on. It was about 5 years later. All of a sudden, it's just like, I got the right center of gravity. I got the right launch. I got the right spin. And I feel like we're in such a better spot where every company's got something like to the tune of 5 different drivers.
Yeah.
And you might come in and you say, oh, I need this, you know, 10K. Or 10,000 MOI. Yeah, but if you spin the ball, you need just something low spin, and then we're good to go.
It's funny you mention that because I play the 10K and I spin the ball, but it's just because I hit that thing dead on a rope, dead straight, 290 every time.
But if it does what you need it to, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So I think the huge advancement is in the technology of miss hits. It always has been. These companies keep harping on these ideas of aerodynamics, which is not something that's in the rules and regulations. The amount of weight, where you can put the weight, how fast the ball can come off the face. Those are the only regulations that generally, no, there's more. But by the rules, those are the ones that are most important. So if no company can make it come off faster, ball speed-wise, if nobody can make it go straighter because of where the weight is center gravity-wise, if nobody can make something bigger, the only thing you are left with is the miss hits and the aerodynamics.
Yeah, and I think that's why, generally speaking, like when you read the My Golf Spy articles, drivers haven't changed a ton over the last 10 years because they can't get all that much better. Like, literally, Jake Knapp put an M2 in play at Torrey. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like,
was it an M2 or an M4?
I thought it was an M2.
I think it was an M4.
Was an M4?
Still, it doesn't
matter. You know, but regardless, an M2 or an M4. I mean, that's a 5 or 6 year old driver now.
Maybe more. No. More than that.
More than that.
Yeah.
When did that? Man, how old am I?
Because remember, we had M6, then he had Sim 2, then he had Stealth 2, and we're in Q10.
Yeah, I thought the Sim 2. Yeah, you're right. It's probably 8 to 10 years older.
It's back there. But either way, it's okay. Like, that's okay that it's back there. if you've optimized what you've done and it's working well for you, you don't have to change that as long as it does, if you can, until you find something better, right? And better is kind of that ambiguous term, like, well, what's better? Well, is it just ball speed? Is it direction? Is it, I got a better launch and a better spin?
Yeah.
Like I try to tell people, it's like, if I'm going to get you, if I get you 20 yards of carry, but it's only 5 yards farther, trust me when I say this, you're going to have better shots.
Yeah.
Because 20 yards on a wet day is 20 yards. It's not 5 yards.
It's the difference between being able to carry a bunker or something,
yeah,
and not, or being in the bunker.
So I think we are at the best possible point in terms of the adjustability. Being even like, you know, Cobra's got 33 positions. Yeah, but 0.4 degrees in terms of loft is good. 2 degrees is what, like, they can go 2 degrees in either way, loft or lie. And that's more than anyone else is offering in the moment. But Titleist and Callaway do it as well. They can do loft and independently from lie. And then you start taking weight, moving the mass. So I got center of gravity. I can get spin. I can get launch. The drivers are in the best possible spot they've ever been. But I definitely think that the advantage in a driver today over the last, say, 5 years ago, right, is 100% the misses are better. The sweet spot is going to be the best you can get. Just outside of that sweet spot, they're way better. Even further outside of it, and you have to kind of see what driver from what company does that for you.
Yeah.
Because if you're playing at whatever handicap you're playing at, if you have that one or two shots out of 10 that are just off, if I might make one of the two shots more playable and better, you know, you have a better chance.
Yeah.
The second part of your question was really about shafts.
And I was going to say, is it shafts now? This is because when people ask me, just my opinion,
yeah,
should I get fit for a shaft? I'm playing footsie. Should I get fit for a shaft, or should I get fit for a driver? I always say, yes, but you need to find the right shaft. Like I think the shaft influences more of somebody's driver, like what they're looking for.
Feedback.
Than the head does.
It's feedback.
Yeah, so let's talk shafts real quick as we wrap up. Okay. Could you go over just real quick kind of the so like when I say Ventus Black 7X,
yeah,
right? I know what that means, but I think like generally speaking, people go, well, I don't know what that means. Like, you know, let's talk about, you know, the different lot. There's, I think, three categories, right? There's weight, so like the the 7 would be 70 grams,
yep,
right? And then there's the stiffness, which is S, X, and R, which is like regular stiffness,
sure.
And then there's the like the launch condition. So yeah, like for Ventus, it's red, blue, and black.
Yep.
For others, you know, they've got different, but it's those kind of three things.
Yeah.
Is that relatively
accurate? Actually kind of boils down to, it's even easier than that. So the shaft is a tube. It tapers down to the bottom. Essentially, how thick and where the thickness is in a shaft determines how it bends.
Oh, so I haven't thought about it that way.
It really comes down to the weight. And so if I grab something that's extremely heavy, it's probably very, very thick and it will not flex as much.
Sure. A board.
A board. And that goes up and down the line in terms of every company is going to make something super duper heavy and really, really stiff.
And generally speaking, those go right or left.
They don't go anywhere, because if you leave the face open, it's going right. If you shut the face, it's going left. But they have a tendency not to kick quite as much, as the shaft is absolutely moving through the ball and the club head tends to move in front of the shaft as it's getting there. And so like we think a lot of lag and we see these players with this huge lag, but the reality is that everything's tied to gravity and inertia. So it's from a physics perspective, if you think of a shaft that's not moving, that's the way the shaft wants to be. Sure. So the stiffer that shaft is, that's the way it wants to be more. So if you take a shaft that's very lightweight or very flexible, there's a lot of variation in its bending. And it's that bending that happens more or less depending on the weight of it. So you're not going to find something that's super ultra lightweight, but super extra stiff. It's kind of an oxymoron in it.
Contradict each other.
Yeah. If you want something stiff, you have to thicken the wall, and thickening the wall adds weight. So there are plenty out there. Oh, this is an extra stiff shaft. Yes, but compared to what? And so what I like to say is, shaft companies are trying to sell the shaft. they're not out there going, well, the shaft's going to work for you just based off certain numbers. But in a, as a general, if something's happening, I want to try to influence it by the weight of the shaft and also even in terms of the feedback that I'm getting. Like if you don't know you're missing it on the toe or the heel, and I give you a shaft that you can say, oh, I felt that was on the toe or the heel, that's more important. But I want to look at the shafts as an overall. You've got generally three different colors. So they have a shaft that's thicker, heavier, and stiffer, and that tends to launch lower. So when you look at the bending point, so the stiffer the tip section is, the higher the bending point goes. The higher it goes, the less that whole bottom flexes, so it comes off lower.
Yep.
So if you've got, if you take your bending point and you move it down so that the tip gets bent, it kicks more. Yep,
it's going to launch higher.
But the only way to do that is to make it thinner and more flexible. So that's sure. Why I said something super duper heavy is super duper lightweight is not going to be able to be very stiff because you have to thicken the wall to make it stiffer. Now, in that sense, every company is making different models. They're making some that are low launch, mid launch, high launch. They're making some that are heavier, middleweight, lightweight. And so if you go to the portfolio of a shaft company, Fujikura, do you have Ventus in yours?
I play the DM on a whiteboard.
Okay, well, great. Mitsubishi. Do you even want to guess as to the number of models? I'm not talking about models within the models. Like the shaft model. Brands that Mitsubishi puts out. Well,
I'd guess it's 5 times 5 times 5.
Probably.
So over 100.
You know?
That sound right?
No, it's not quite that. I'm just saying like there's, if I think about Mitsubishi, there's a Tensai. And they've got a Tensai black. They've got a Tensai blue. They've got a Tensai red.
And then they've got that and all the Keeley. Different weights.
You got a Keeley. You got the boards, you got the whiteboard, the blue board, the red board.
Yeah.
Like you can start to see where I'm going with it. There's just three models and each of them have three models within them. And then each of those probably has six weights in them.
So yeah, it's actually probably pretty close. 3 times 3 times six and then times three.
About.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where we start to get into the, as you say, the wormhole or the rabbit hole in terms of like, well, what's going on? It's a general sense. If I've got something that has an appropriate weight, If it's producing a really nice impact location, if we're getting good numbers with it, changing the shaft can change the way you move the club, period. And there's no guarantee. It's only what happens next. So that's why we try to narrow it down into a certain zone. And then once we're in that zone, we kind of stay in that zone. So like if you had a Ventus black, it would have been the same. If you went and got a Project X, their new one, the Denali, or you get a Hazardous, the Hazardous black, that's heavy and extra stiff. Guess what? It's essentially the same shaft.
They're all pretty similar, yeah.
But the way that they're made and the feedback they give you can be different, and that's what you're looking for.
Sure.
I love graphite design. What I like about graphite design is an overall, I have Ventus and like all my stuff too, but what I really love about graphite design is that they produce one shaft a year, and that shaft is trying to produce, like, call it a profile. So we've got the current profile, which is called the Game Changer. It's a little bit higher launching, and maybe a little bit kind of mid-launch, mid-spin. So it fits a category, and they do it in all sorts of weights and flexes. But last year they had what's called a VF, and it's the shaft that we most noticeably see Tiger and, like, Justin Thomas playing. Yep. It's black and red. Yep. Well, that's a very low launch, a very, very, very stiff shaft. Again, that fits a different category in the bottom end of their chart. And then again, they do it in all sorts of weights and flexes. And then the next year and the next year and the next year. What they're doing is they're going back about 15 years in their portfolio and they're making one shaft, one really, really good shaft a year in that profile. And so if you want to go back a couple of years, you can get it. But the way they make it, the way that's the MSI is a way that they wrap it in terms of the, they have different plies. They do it in different angles. There's different degrees that they throw this down.
Wow.
What ends up happening is you get a feedback. Graphite design tends to be, I don't want to call it soft, but maybe a little bit softer
more feel.
Yeah. Feel in the impact. Like it's not quite as harsh as some others can get to.
Sure. Yeah, right. You got a little bit more feel with it.
And so it's very popular because it's like, all right, well, this is stable. I hit it really good, but it felt really good. Well, there again, it comes back to feedback. So you can get into so many different shaft conversations with it. And the reality is you test a couple. Once, if you found the right head with the right loft, and you've got it in the settings that we're looking at, and you tried four different shafts from four different companies, you're going to get four different results.
Yeah.
And maybe the better that you are in terms of the results you're seeing is those results might be much, much slimmer. And so if we do this for you, you can tell right away when you hit something and you went, no, that doesn't feel good. So that's one of the things that we try to do with shafts. We do it. You think about it as graphite is most of the time, everything's graphite in our woods. And then you get into irons, and we do have graphite, but we also have steel. If we talk about steel real quick, just one quick example is Dynamic Gold. Dynamic Gold has a 95 gram, a 105 gram, a 120 gram. And then they have, now they've created the mid 115 that comes in mid 100, yeah. Mid 115. And then they have their standard Dynamic Gold. Then they have a Dynamic Gold X7, which is another weight category. Like it's like, I just listed Dynamic Gold. You punch in Dynamic Gold, it's not just one shaft anymore.
Yeah.
There's this multitude of weight, and that affects the flex as well as the type of feedback and the type of performance you're going to get. So
it's been, I know I've overextended your welcome, so yeah, I appreciate it.
You know what though? No, I'm almost out of tequila.
That's how you know the podcast is over. Mm-hmm. It's always great. I always appreciate all the knowledge. These are always some of our best performing episodes. So if people want to see you.
I hope so, because the Wedge Magician's here.
Yeah, the Wedge Magician is here, and he does approve of the Member Guest Podcast.
I do. Absolutely, I do.
So if people need to see you, you're at the Minnetonka store location. Yeah. I always tell people to go there and get fit. I know it's February now, so I imagine you guys start to get busy coming March and April as people ramp up for the new year. So,
and if you know, there are people that are watching that aren't by a store, too.
You can just do online fittings now,
can't you? Yeah, yeah. You can go to secondswing.com. There are online, we have consultations that way. We still have fitters that are able to answer questions to start to get you down this road, because that's ultimately what we're looking for. The other part of that too becomes, like, for us, we have a 30-day play guarantee. Now, in the winter months, it doesn't start till we play in the springtime. But even for that, is like, if you are going to be ordering something and you do get something, consult with someone. Call our online sales and service team, our online fitters. Then if you get that club and you have an opportunity to play it, and we're looking at performance and some tweaking and whatnot, you still have the opportunity to get that back to us and maybe look at something that might work a little bit better. We do that one time for free, because we realize that you have to go meet the rubber on the road. You got to go out there and see how it flies.
Yeah.
And so many, you know, how many times have we done something inside and you go outside and you just come?
Yeah, it's just completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Totally agree. Well, I love it. Thank you very much, as always, for your time.
Yeah.
I can't wait to play more this summer with Mr. Fun. Zinger, who I know is absolutely listening, and he always stays tuned to the end. So shout out our guy Zinger.
Well, keep your grooves clean and stay razor sharp.
Yeah. Thanks, Fitz.